Blog Talk Radio.
This is Lauren Litton, host of Quick Take Ohio, a pre-recorded podcast highlighting Ohio's juvenile justice news. Prison Kids, A Crime Against America's Children is an hour-long documentary that investigates the jailing of children in the United States. The documentary, which made its television premiere on October 4th, was developed by the Fusion Network. Fusion's mission is to champion a young, diverse, and inclusive America through the stories shared, the voices that tell them, and ways in which they bring them to the world. Connie Fossey, the producer and co-writer of Prison Kids, joins us to discuss the making of the documentary. Welcome, Connie.
Thank you, Lauren, for having me. I'm glad to be here.
You know, I follow Fusion on Twitter and Facebook, and it is the Fusion Network like covers an enormous amount of topics. How did juvenile justice become one of them?
Well, it's an interesting story. Actually, Fusion CEO Isaac Leek, last year he came to our team and he said, we need to do something on prison reform. And of course, it's a huge monster, right? It's about a criminal justice system. How do you even start working on a story about it? But my colleague and the director of this documentary, Alyssa Figueroa, she took the lead and she started making some calls. And what she found is that many of the people who are in our prison system today were incarcerated when they were kids. And that really stuck to her. She started looking into this angle, and I'm really glad she did. Because right now we see a lot of buzz about the criminal justice system and about the reforms that we need to make. But we need to start with the kids. You know, what we found in our reporting is that the earlier you help the person, the greater is the chance of that person to stay out of trouble. And in my case, you know, particularly was because I was trying to work on a story about the correlation between the people who are killed by police every year and mental health. And what I found is that more than half of them, and estimated because we don't have great data on this, were, you know, mentally ill. And another thing that I found was that more than half of the people who are in our prisons today suffer from some mental health condition. Since we were working in such a massive project about the juvenile system, I tried to look at the numbers in the juvenile system, and they were even higher, 70, 80, 90% in some cases. So I think we joined forces, and I'm really glad that we focus on the kids. Because if we don't do anything right now, we're going to see the same statistics today, tomorrow. And if we don't help the kids right now, these are going to be the kids that are going to fill in our prisons tomorrow.
Yes, and I know, you know, we've been chatting, and it's amazing how much you've learned about the juvenile justice system, which you'll be sharing your thoughts and perspectives mm-hmm. as we continue to talk. The documentary did focus on three states, Ohio being one of them, and then also Louisiana and Florida. How did you choose those states?
Well, I think we put together, you know, a long list of states initially. I mean, it had California, New York, Illinois, Wyoming. We tried to focus on states that were either reform or were in the process of getting reforms, or states that really were struggling in their juvenile systems. And we were lucky enough that we got great access in, you know, Florida, Ohio, and Louisiana. And it all came to that. I think when you're doing these type of stories, you need to get access to the kids. You need to get access to the main sources. And we were lucky enough that we got really good access in those states.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking about access, let's listen to one of the kids that you interviewed, Alan.
It was almost to the point it was damaging me. It was always making me worse. Like, I was almost starting to feel like I ain't had nothing to lose. After all, I was fed up. Like, I'm tired of being in the cell. I just acting crazy. But it wasn't just me. Everybody was feeling that way. Like, you just get it doing worse and worse. Like.
So that was Alan talking about his experience in prison and in solitary confinement that you reported out that he spent in 1 year 313 days in solitary. And there were other kids that you focused on, too. How did you locate them, first of all?
Well, first of all, it's really hard to listen to that, even after, you know, all this time. But I think you try to go to the people who work with these kids every day. And we really use great help from public defenders, from groups like the Southern Poverty Center, the National Mental, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and of course, you know, you guys, the Children Law Center in Ohio. I think without your help, we were not going to be able to get to these kids. And of course, once we, you know, got to the first contact, essentially the families who gave us permission, you know, to talk to the kids.
Yeah, you talked about it's still difficult to listen to the story, the way that you followed these kids in their daily lives. You really got to see just even one piece of what the challenges they're facing. Was there a story that touched you more than others?
Well, I think when you're doing these type of stories, it's really hard not to be moved by these kids and what they have gone through. And I produce most of my stories in Ohio, so I clearly develop a closer connection with Alan, Brian, and Savannah. But I can tell you in a specific moment that was really emotional for me, and that was with Brian. Brian, as you remember in the documentary, he's 21 years old. He spent most of his childhood in prison, and he, you know, suffered from severe mental illness. And when I met him, Brian was doing okay. He wasn't doing great, but he was doing better. He had, you know, reunited with his dad. He was living with his twin brother. And I was really happy for him. But a week later, he gave me a call, and he said that he was homeless. So I flew to Ohio as soon as I could, and I filmed with him. And I remember being in that park. It was an isolated park, not in the best area of Ohio, and I was just with my cameraman, and I saw a completely different Brian. You know, he was hopeless. He was clearly desperate for help. He didn't even know where he was going to sleep that night, and it really hit me. I think I understood at that moment that first, there was very little that I could do as a reporter to help him directly. Because my job at the end of the day is just to share his story. But it also hit me that the lives of these kids are like roller coasters, if you think about it. One day they can be good, the next day they could be bad. And it's in part because they don't have a real support system. Things that you and me, Lauren, maybe take for granted. You know, parents who care, a doctor, a house, a place to stay. Mm-hmm. So when you're thinking about helping these kids, it's not only about offering help. You need to understand that it's more complex to, you know, than that. And I remember the next day, we spent the whole day with Brian, filming with him, you know, trying to find shelters. And it was just, you know, heartbreaking. So I think if I have to choose a moment that really changed everything to me and put everything into perspective, it was definitely that one.
Right. And I remember watching it. And Brian being clear that even after this ends, this interview, this is where I'm going to be, in this park. And this is it. Yeah.
And by the way, that interview was done at 11 p.m. at night. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just imagine leaving Brian there. It was extremely hard for me, you know, as a reporter, you know, to even process that. And you know, Brian is doing better right now, but he still, you know, doesn't have a stable place to sleep. So, you know, that's the reality of these kids. That's what they have to, you know, struggle with every day. And it's important to think, you know, Brian suffered from severe mental illness. Mm-hmm. How can someone get or worry even about treatment if he doesn't even have a place to stay? I think that was a key thing that that I remember from doing that interview, thinking about that.
Right. And you touch upon so many different challenges that face these kids and the juvenile justice system in 1 hour. The solitary confinement, charging kids as adults, disproportionate minority conduct, status offenses. You talk to one kid, Zion, who's in the, you know, was facing school charges, mental health issues, as you talked about, over-medication, reentry. So it can really be overwhelming even for the people watching this. What are your hopes with the impact of this documentary?
You know, what I learned is that if we want to have an impact in the first place, we need to be specific. You know, Fusion launched a campaign in WhatHas.org to end the use of solitary confinement, and I feel really strong about this issue Because I can tell you, I interview a lot of people for this story, both in and out of the system. And no one person said that this is good for kids. I saw what solitary did to these kids firsthand. Many of them are still struggling. We saw what happened in Riker Islands with Khalif Browder. So I think this is one issue where we need to take action now. And Ohio, ironically, you know, is the best example of, you know, that we don't need to put kids in solitary confinement to keep facilities safe. I mean, the Department of Youth Services, the agency that runs these facilities, just came out with a report that found that since they reduced the use of solitary confinement, violence actually went down. So they realized that the more you isolate these kids, the worse you're going to do and the more violence you're going to create. So I'm really happy, you know, that Ohio finally got it, you know. But we need to remember that it took about almost, you know, 12 years to get this done. And even in Ohio, we still have detention centers where kids can be put in solitary confinement. We still have adult prisons where juveniles can be isolated. You know, in 42 states, that's what we found in our reporting, there are no laws that limit or ban the use of solitary confinement for kids. So we need to demand more from our state and our federal government in order to, you know, get change. And it's not enough just to say or to hear the president said, you know, this is bad. I think we need concrete action at both a state and federal level. And I hope our documentary in some way influenced that change.
Hmm. Well, one thing noticed, and having also worked on this issue for years, is the sensitivity that Fusion Network put forward in capturing the kids' stories. So, like, one thing you did was there was a decision not to disclose their charges. Are there tips that you might have for other media professionals in covering stories about kids?
Well, one thing that we knew since the very beginning is that we were dealing with a very vulnerable population. These are not only minors. These are kids who come from really difficult backgrounds and kids who have experienced a great deal of trauma. So we needed to be careful. We couldn't, you know, abuse these kids as, you know, the system and many people in their lives have abused them in the past. And I think, you know, one thing that I learned as a reporter and one tip that I would give to news organizations is that we need to dig deeper. You can just call someone a criminal because they are in prison, because it's way more complicated than that. As we show in our documentary, many of these kids were incarcerated for things that wouldn't even be considered crimes if they were adult, you know, status offenses like missing curfew or skipping class or drinking a beer. I mean, things that I did when I was a kid, and honestly, I never fear the police for it. So I think it's trying to understand why these kids commit these crimes and why they are in prison in the first place. And I think we made the editorial decision in our documentary to not disclose the charges, first because the records of these kids are confidential. So if it wasn't, you know, for their lawyers providing those records to us, those records are not public. So there's no need to talk about them. And on top of that, I think the story was not about what, you know, these kids did. It was about why they end up in prison and, you know, why the system has so many kids incarcerated. So I think we understood since the very beginning that we needed to be careful in the way we deal with this case. And I'm glad we made the editorial decision to not disclose the charges, because at the end of the day, the story was not about that.
Mm-hmm. You've already shared a lot, but is there other things that you want to share with our audience about what you personally learned from filming this documentary?
You know, it's incredible because you don't really know what to expect when you're doing these type of stories. And I learned the most from the kids, honestly. I was really worried at the very beginning that I was not even going to get to kids. I was like, oh, my God, it's going to take me years to even get to these kids. And then it's going to take me more time to win their trust. And what I found is that these kids were open books. They just wanted to be listened. They wanted to be understood. And I was really lucky that I had the chance to witness that. At the end of the day, they are regular kids. They made mistakes, and unfortunately, they ended up in prison, and that, you know, had a huge impact in their lives. But I think if something that I learned is, you know, that you just need to listen as a reporter, and you're going to find great stories as a result. And, you know, I hope people, when they watch this documentary, understands the human cost of mass incarceration. I think we usually talk about how expensive it is to put someone in prison. I mean, it costs taxpayers about $8 billion to put kids in prison, just to give you an estimate. But I think we need to understand that it can also destroy lives, and it's doing that to these kids. We need to understand what we're doing to these kids and really question ourselves until it's too late. We don't want to see the same statistics we're seeing now. So I really hope that when people watch Prison Kids, that's, you know, their takeaway, that we need to do something different.
Terrific. So speaking of watching Prison Kids, if you happen to be in Columbus, Ohio on Monday, which would be the October 19th, there is a free screening at the Gateway Theater on OSU's campus, and it's going to be from 5 to 7 p.m., and there's going to be a discussion afterwards. It sounds wonderful. However, for those of you who will not be in that area, you can watch this online at fusion.net, and if you look under their series, it's called Prison Kids. And as Connie mentioned, there's also a petition there asking the federal government to ban solitary confinement for minors. You can also join the campaign of Stop Solitary Ohio Youth at childrenslawky.org, Stop Solitary Confinement, which is asking that there be no solitary confinement for any kid in any facility held in Ohio. So thank you, Connie, for appearing on Quick Take Ohio.
No, thank you, Lauren, for featuring our documentary. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you to all our listeners.